Welcome to a new edition of the Famous Interviews with Joe Domino series. On this episode, we talk with author, business thought leader, entrepreneur, co-founder, and stage 4 cancer survivor, Kevin R. Kehoe. This is one motivated and busy person. He is the author of the book One Hit Wonder, and he is the co-founder of Aspire Software. He was born and raised in New York City and lived most of his life in Southern California. There were stops in between in Florida and Texas. He is the grandson of Irish immigrants, the oldest of 6 children. Over his life, he has been an altar boy, choir boy, business consultant, entrepreneur, motorcycle racer, surfer, and marathon runner. That right there is a rich tapestry. His story is fascinating. Enjoy.
Hi, Kevin. Joe Domino.
Hey, Joe. How are you?
Hey, I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks.
Thanks for taking a minute out today. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no worries at all. Where are you? 816? That looks like Kansas City or something.
Kansas City, Missouri, yes.
Okay, good.
You mentioned Paul McCartney, so, yeah, they sang about us at one point. So before we get into the talking points, just to kind of probe a little bit into your life, you're originally from New York City, but you're in Scottsdale now, correct?
Yes.
Talk to me a little bit about kind of in the beginning. How did things begin for you and give you this dream and desire to be as highly motivated as you are?
Yeah, good question. I don't know if I ever had a dream or a plan. I kind of mentioned that in the book, but I'm the oldest of 6, and I think that has something to do with it. And I was always highly motivated to do things, you know? And I was looking at your website, and I see some of the stuff you do. I was in music when I was a kid. I was in the St. Kilian Boy Choir. We sang in Lincoln Center, Carnegie Hall. It was a big deal, you know. And so I think, you know, growing up, you know, when you're the oldest, ultimately you have 5 other brothers and sisters. You're kind of on your own, you know. You kind of create your own path. And so I think that's what I always did. I went from one thing to the other, you know, through college, et cetera. Ultimately, I ended up in MBA school. I ended up as a consultant. I ended up starting a software company. You know, and none of that, I didn't have a dream, Joe, to start a software company when I was a kid or even start any kind of company, you know. But, I was always aspirational, if that makes sense. I always was willing to take risks. You know, as I told Liz, it's weird. I'm just not that afraid of failure, you know. You know, when you start, you don't have a lot to lose. You either succeed or you don't, and you get to try again. So I don't know if that answers your question, but, you know, I came from an aspirational family. You know, we were always expected to do well, so I guess that's just sort of got into my system.
Well, and I think the older I get in my life, the more I admire that whole idea of failure, because I think people are afraid of it. It's almost kind of a taboo thing for a lot of people, but the only way that you truly learn is by going through those kinds of things where you have failures and you have breakdowns. And I think a lot of leaders exude that notion more than anything else. And I think that's really, kind of a cornerstone of somebody that goes after it.
Yeah. I don't know. It was kind of built into me. You know, even when we started the software company, you know, we took a lot of money from a lot of investors. And, you know, I always... Not that I knew that we would succeed, but I wasn't worried about failure. You know, I said, we'll give it our best shot. And everyone understood that going in, you know, and we just happened to reward our investors handsomely. And believe me, we had little failures along the way, you know, and things happen. As you said, I probably had more failures than successes, Joe.
You know what I find interesting about the funding up front, I find this with musicians when they do Kickstarter and all that, is it has to be an enormous amount of confidence going into a project, knowing that you have people that already believe in you before they actually get something materialized.
Yeah, I think that's super important. And a lot of that, you know, was built on, you know, I've been in that industry, you know, and our software was what's called a vertical package for a very specific vertical industry application. Landscape, snow and ice management, and construction. As a matter of fact, I've worked as clients with a couple, that's why I know Kansas City so well, Signature Landscape, NBC Landscape. I know all those guys. They're all clients of mine, you know. Those relationships built, I think, trust over the years that Kevin could do this. And so it helped with the funding, right, to get us started.
You know, the one thing that's been foundational about our lives lately in the last couple of years is COVID's kind of rocked every possible foundation that we all stand on and altered paths. And I'm curious with you, what did COVID do for you? What did you maybe realize about, what did you learn over that time that you didn't realize before maybe that's going to make you stronger as hopefully now we get to a more stable point and the world starts opening up?
I think I learned some things that are both, you know, negative and positive. You know, I think we learned some things that you can see what fear does, right, versus hope or you know, not fear versus hope, but you can see what fear can do when it piles on to people, right, how it can really, you know, stop people in what they're doing. Obviously, you learn that you can work away from work, which is quite interesting. I don't think it can happen 100% of the time, but I also hope and feel that, you know, maybe we've learned some lessons about how to deal with things of this nature more effectively, right? Life is a risk in my estimation, right? I mean, I'm a cancer guy. I mean, I had my lung surgery delayed 15 days because I tested positive for COVID, right? I mean, I never had a sniffle, but, you know, I thought that was a rather wrong-headed kind of thing to do. You know, I was much more concerned about my cancer at the time, right? And getting that, you know, worked on. I mean, I think it's certainly alerted us that, you know, fear can be, you know, a negative driver of things and create maybe sometimes responses that aren't the best. I think at the same time, it says we can survive things, right? I mean, you can survive almost anything in life.
Yeah, absolutely true. So let's get into One Hit Wonder. You know, this book is 37 short story chapters, which is quite unique. Talk to me about the construction of this book and how it actually, the actual book came to fruition.
Yeah, I mean, it started out, you know, I like going out to dinner, chatting with friends, having a glass of wine, etc. And of course, two glasses of wine, you know, I've got a million stories in my life. And so, I tell a story, people would laugh. And someone says, you ought to write a book. And I had always, in my mind's eye, I created a bucket list or a to-do list, you know, when I was in my 20s, and one of them was write a book. I had no idea what it would be, et cetera. And so that's what gave me the inspiration to share my stories, right, the ones I can remember. Matter of fact, after I wrote the book, I had a lot of people call me and go, how come this story didn't get in the book? And I'm like, I don't always remember that, right? But they remembered that story. And so I thought that I could write a story that's an adventure that people would enjoy, right? It was a good story. And then out of that, what did I learn? So that became the structure. And I had to go through at least two major rewrites to really get that concept right, right? And I think I succeeded because when people read the book, they say, It reads like I'm talking to you, Kevin, right, the people who know me. So that's kind of, I enjoyed it completely, Joe, writing that book. It was a big challenge. You know, by the time I got to, like, second rewrite, I spent most of the summer of 2020, was it? Yeah, or 21. Literally, I'd get to my desk at 7 in the morning, and I'd be there 4 in the afternoon. I'd just write, right, chapter a day. And I liked it. So, you know, I thought it came out okay.
You know, that's quite intuitive because it's kind of like good radio or catching up with an old friend. I mean, it's all about the stories. You know, we're always weaving together this kind of vignette of short stories of who we are, and that seems to be a kind of an intuitive way to digest the story.
I think so. You know, people can relate to a story, especially if it's a good one. It's readable, and my intention was never to get preachy, like it's a how-to book or you should do this. You know, every chapter ended with, well, this is what I learned, right? You know, that type of thing.
What is your definition of the title of this book, One Hit Wonder? How would you define that?
You know, there's a chapter in the book called One Hit Wonder, and I just liked the sound of it, right, as the title for the book. It came from a lunchroom story. You know, very briefly, when we started the company, there was two of us, and by the time we reached 12 people, we needed a new office. And so we were christening the new office with a lunch with those 12 people or so. Song came on a radio playing through the TV set, right? We were trying to figure out how to make the PowerPoint work. And here we are, tech guys. We can't figure out how to make a PowerPoint work on a screen. And the song came on, and I asked, who wrote that song? I know the song, but who wrote it? And someone said, well, that's so-and-so. They were a real one-hit wonder. And so I asked them, jokingly, teasing, how many hits do you got? Because I said, I know, I got none. I said, I would give my life, I'd kill to be a one-hit wonder, to do something that would be remembered forever, right, that people like. And I said, you know what, that's my hope for us, that we here commit ourselves to writing the hit, right, to putting together a piece of software that we could look back on 10 years from now, buying you guys drinks at some bar in Hawaii and saying, look at what we did, right? Look at the things we did. And you know, for me, the one-hit wonder is not a failure in life. The one-hit wonder is a success. They probably wrote lots of other songs that never made the charts that they maybe even liked more. But the one-hit wonder is just a hard worker, shows up every day. And, you know, in our case, I said, listen, you know, you live life not to accumulate stuff. You live life to accumulate memories with other people, right? That's the point. And I can tell you, all those people today, the original 10, 12 in that room, that they all have told me at some time or other that they didn't realize at the time that this was going to be one of the best experiences of their lives. And I thought, well, that's success, Joe. I mean, that's a good thing.
Yeah, you know, I keep thinking about, from the music standpoint, Don McLean, my American Pie, you know, and that guy is one of the hardest working guys, and he's still at it. But at the end of the day, everybody's going to always remember that. He will always be iconic because of that one-hit wonder.
Yeah, and I think that's a great thing. But the other side, like you said, you're always working. You're always there because you never know when the next hit comes. And you know, and that's a great way to look at things and pursue things. So that's kind of how that's why I named the book One Hit Wonder. It's not about me, right? I've told people in other podcasts, I'm not the one hit wonder, right? It's just a concept.
Well, and we touched a little bit already on failure, and you as you mentioned in your bio, you were fired 6 times prior to getting to this successful point in your life, and you've obviously learned a lot from it. So what is it like to be at this point in your life where, you know, you were well halfway through your journey in life before you got to this point and you had all these failures leading up? What did all of that teach you, and how sweet was the success when you got there?
I'm 67 now, right? We sold the entire company last summer, you know, when I was age 66. It was wonderful. It was great. But what was really sweet for me was the experience going through it the entire time. I've had successes and failures along the way. You know, the thing that really I'm pleased with, I don't know if that's the right word, I'm pleased with now, is all the friends and people I've made, you know. And, you know, cancer changes your life too. You know, I've never been a touchy, feely, huggy person. And today I am, right? I tell everyone I love them. And I do, you know. And I think that's been the real sort of learning for me, is how valuable people are, and even when you don't know it, how much you can mean to them. That makes it super sweet, Joe.
I would think equally as important as being a successful businessman, beating cancer had to be probably as high up there on that list. And I'm curious, what did that teach you about being alive and moving forward to defeat something like cancer?
I'll say this, I haven't defeated it, right? I'm still with it, you know, 8 years later. And, you know, we're still in a fight. I just came out of a first-in-human NK cell trial experiment, and the jury's still out whether it worked or not. That experience has been far more important than my business success in my life. It taught me a couple things. Number one, it's easy to engage in self-pity. And early on, I made a decision not to ask the question or get caught up in that little downward spiral, is why me? Because the answer sometimes is, Joe, just the cause, right? You got it. I mean, and to deal with it that way. And so I think I was always constructed not to fall into self-pity, but to figure out what's next, what do I need to do? So it taught me that. Second, it really taught me, because I'm super self-reliant, that I had to rely on other people, sometimes completely. My wife, specifically, you know, and that's not easy for a very self-reliant person to do, you know, is to rely on other people and trust that they'll do it for you. And maybe another one is, sometimes you're better to be lucky than good, right? And my oncologist will say this, you know, is, you know, because when I was diagnosed, there were two other women who got diagnosed, Diane and Betty, at the same time as I did, and they're gone. They've been dead for 2 years, and I'm still here with the same diagnosis. And so there's something in my mind's eye, you know, I was born and raised a Roman Catholic. I don't really go to church much anymore. I have some disagreements with the Catholic hierarchy and how they handle certain things. But it's not a big thing like that. But I realized, you know, there's such a thing as the grace of God and luck. You know, you got to believe and have faith sometimes, even when there's no reason to have it. Does that make any sense?
Oh, yeah, it totally makes sense, yeah. And I'm curious, during this nostalgic time of May with graduates and things, people moving on, what advice would you give graduates based on what you've talked about with failure and the success and all of these real life trials and successes you've gone through?
I'd say if you're in business, right, and you have any intentions to ultimately succeed in business, number one thing I'd say, I think you'll always be happiest if you work for yourself. For me, that was true, right? If you can and you have the opportunity and you can make it work, start your own business. I think it's just the greatest thing in the world. It was for me. Second, don't gamble. I mean, I take a lot of risks, and I go in the deep end of the pool. But believe me, you know, I've run the numbers, Joe, and I've thought things through, so I'm not gambling. So I'd say, you know, don't be a gambler. Really think about the real upside and downside, and don't gamble, especially with other people's money. You know, and I'd also tell them, you're going to fail. And if you do anything in life, and I never really did, I wish I had found a good mentor, right? I had listened. I'm not a great listener. It took me a long time to do that. And I'd encourage them to shut up and listen to other people, right? You should take your own counsel. That's important. But at the same time, you should really listen to other people, because you need a check and balance on your own thought process. And then after that, I'd say enjoy the ride, you know. You're going to have a lot different kinds of fears when you're 20 and 30 than you are when you're 50 and 60. I said, I wish I could give you my 50 and 60-year-old brain, because you'd live life with a whole lot less stress, right? You kind of know what's going on. So that might be my graduation speech.
Yeah, it sounds a lot like Benjamin Button's, which would be wonderful to be able to do that kind of in reverse. Who would you consider a hero for you? Who are your hero or heroes?
Abraham Lincoln's always been my hero forever. I mean, I think I know everything about his life, read every book. You know, I'm just so impressed with, you know, him as a selfless person and what he did and the courage it took to do that. So, I mean, Abraham Lincoln has always been a hero of mine. Beethoven. I mean, I was in the music world, and I remember singing. We our choir performed on stage with Andre Castellanos, and we did the Ninth Symphony, Ode to Joy. And I remember as a kid thinking, how did that guy who was deaf write this thing? I said, that's just genius. I thought there's always a little bit of genius in all of us, and a guy like that could do that. You know, anyone could do anything. So, I mean, actually, if we're on a screen here, you'd see both their pictures on the wall behind me.
So if you can meet anybody alive today, who would it be?
Oh, boy. That's a hell of a question. Never really thought about that. If I could meet anyone alive today, who would it be? So I don't know. Let me come back to that.
Yeah, we'll circle back. So everyone has a perception of you, your family, your friends, fans of your book, but you live your life. What's your perception of you? Who do you think you are?
I can be an intimidating person. I've been told that many times. And some of it's just because I'm very direct and I'm very self-sure of things. And that's a blessing and a curse, I'll tell you that. I think they'll also tell you that I am absolutely loyal. I'm absolutely honest. I'm dependable. I will be there for people all the time, and that I'm a nice guy, you know, in many ways, you know. People feel they can trust me, you know, and I think I've learned that about myself. You know, it takes a life to learn about who you are and master some of it, you know, and live with what your weaknesses are, you know, and then focus on your strengths. And so, I don't know, I think if you ask people, they'd probably tell you something like that.
So let's revise that. Who would you want to meet? And I want to know, who would play you in a film? If you had a film about your life up to this point, who would be the actor that would play you?
I don't watch a lot of movies. I'd have to go back to, like, an old actor, I guess. Gary Sinise, you know, not the star, but, you know. Maybe Gary Sinise, right? That kind of personality. Maybe Matthew McConaughey has a little too much ego, but you know, I've read his book. I think he's a pretty decent guy, you know, pretty honest. Maybe those, you know?
Absolutely. Kevin, it was great to get to know you. Thank you for taking a minute out today. Good luck with everything as we move forward.
Thank you, Joe.
Thanks for listening and tuning in to another Famous Interview with Joe Domino, where we cover the world of art, literature, music, and thinkers from around the globe. Most of the music on these episodes comes from the great Kevin MacLeod at incompetech.com. If you want to hear more interviews, go to Famous Interviews with Joe Domino in the iTunes Store. You can also visit Neon Jazz at YouTube. And for everything Joe Domino related, go to joedomino.com. And when you're there, you can keep this going by contributing to either Patreon or PayPal. Until next time.